This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, this morning it's all about you, and we want to introduce you, in case you you haven't heard the name before, to Adam Bromberg, who is an artist who was born in Johannesburg. He's based in London now, and he's just brought to South Africa a new exhibition called Bandage the Knife, Not the Wound. Opens on Tuesday evening at the Goodman Gallery in Johannesburg, and I'm very pleased to have him in here this morning. And I have one of your works, which I just showed you, and I've had it for a couple of years now, so it's a pleasure to meet the artist behind this work. You do some controversial stuff, Adam.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, it is good, because you have to be provocative. I mean, art isn't just a work of aesthetic beauty anymore. It could be, but it's so much more interesting when there's a theme, when there's an idea, when there's a thought, when there's a sort of iconic representation of something, which is almost like an artifact, a moment in time that is associated with mm-hmm. it. It just gives it enormous depth and relevance, which you wouldn't get from something that's just pretty.
I couldn't agree more. And I think people who work with representation are actually on the front line of politics right now. I mean,
right.
I was just listening to your show when I was outside the window, and you mm-hmm. were talking about face recognition technology.
Yes.
In fact, one of our most recent projects, we got wind of a Russian corporation that was at the avant-garde of developing the most sophisticated facial recognition technology. This was about 2 years ago. It's now been rolled out worldwide. And what they had developed was a system whereby if you walk down the street, it would identify, they had little cameras, little sections of your face. And by the time you had reached the end of Tyrone Avenue or whatever it was, they would have mapped your entire face. It went in a database, which means essentially that all of our faces are now on that system. And we are all, in fact, criminals waiting to commit a crime in the future, right?
So they've got a database on all of us already.
Absolutely.
God, and there goes that privacy argument we were just having, because there isn't any. Full stop, huh?
And I think privacy is like a key part of our work and our concerns, really.
Yeah, you've done a lot. I say controversial just because it's a bucket term for a lot of the stuff that you do that is provocative, that gets people thinking. But how did all this begin? I'm curious as to how someone from Johannesburg can become an artist of international repute and with exhibitions at places like the Pompidou Center. I mean, this is no small scale thing. A lot of artists who are very talented and very capable and very and even who are much respected and admired when they start off don't necessarily reach the kind of stage that you've got to. How does that happen?
You know what? I think if you looked at this country, there's a disproportionate amount of incredibly good and successful artists have come out of this small little place. And I think it's no coincidence that we've all grown up under a terrifying system that's given us cause for concern, commitment, and a kind of thought process. So I think like our South African origins are, it's not coincidental, you know, and in fact, it's not working against us.
That's the crucible.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So how did it all start for you? I mean, what kind of work did you begin with? And when did you realize that this is something that you wanted to do?
I worked in Hillbrow Records.
Oh, yeah?
Back in the day, yeah. Chasing shoplifters down the street. But it started with a friendship with my partner in crime, Oliver Chanrin, who's also of
South. I thought
South
he was coming
African.
In this morning. Yeah. He said he's not here. You're representing for
he's,
both.
He's having a lie-in.
Okay.
And it started through friendship, and which is probably the best way to start anything. And then slowly, but very in an undisciplined way, turned into a kind of professional partnership. And that's it. We never planned on it. You know, it's 20 years down the line now. It's two decades of working together. And we still don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
What's your preferred medium? Or what was it when you started?
I think we're always primarily concerned about photography, but that's like saying we're concerned about oxygen, you know, because photography is so ubiquitous. I'm looking in this room, there are 5 cell phones, mobile phones. And I think it's really interesting to look at where we are in terms of photography right now. You know, I mean, everybody is constantly documenting their own lives. We wrote in the press release for the show, 13 trillion images were produced last year. Now, if you compare that to 20 years ago when we started lugging a 5x4 land camera, you know, with negatives, and we used to shoot, you know, schlep all the way to Russia to get into a private military zone and take 10 pictures because that's what we could afford. Now, you know, with Instagram and Facebook, we're all like generating thousands of images. And it goes back to this idea of privacy, I think, which is on the one hand, we're kind of broadcasting our lives, right? And we think we're in control of that narrative. But in fact, and this is part of what comes up in the show we're doing at Goodman, we can see more and more we're feeding a machine, you know? Because who's actually making money out of that?
Not you.
No, it's the people who are in control of the metadata, who know where those images sit, who are in control of the distribution of them. And so there's this kind of, you know, we get a little dopamine hit and we feel in control of our lives. And yet we're feeding this kind of massive, unregulated, neoliberal machine that's come out of Silicon Valley.
Well, I mean, who should we be more suspicious of? Them, because they're obviously partly responsible for this, or people like Putin, who are using it for very obviously nefarious purposes. I mean, you've mentioned the Russians a couple of times since we sat down and started talking, and I am nervous about what kinds of things they're doing. And I'm nervous about the fact that we can't walk down the street anymore without some camera somewhere saying, oh, that's where he is. Mm. It's almost like in these spy movies, but now it's really happening.
Yeah, but we willingly taking part in the system, right? So, and I think also, you got to understand this is the biggest industry in the world, right? And it is the only one which is absolutely unregulated from a financial or political or social aspect.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ethical discussion, even amongst young students. You know, I spend a lot of time teaching young photography students, and their lives, their social lives, their kind of social interaction that happens online or in cyberspace or whatever we want to call it, it's a whole new landscape, right? It's a whole different thing to what you and I were brought up thinking and feeling it was,
and they're immersed in it every single day, and it's almost a priority over real life.
And now I wouldn't undermine the profundity of those relationships just because they're happening on that platform. Unfortunately, that platform is controlled and owned by a handful of people. So you were talking about Mark Zuckerberg earlier this morning. I mean, you know, with his very sweet smile, he said we're going to be adjusting everything in the spirit of things. 1 week later, all his customers who are outside, who are located in the EU, are conveniently shipped off to California, where they have less stringent data laws, while he keeps them in Ireland, where they have less stringent tax laws, you know. And if that is not
manipulation,
you know, and like toxic behavior, and you know, in the spirit of no good, of no kind of no civic
well
care, really.
you've got a warm reception here for any anti-Zuckerberg sentiment, because I think all of us have started to realize that he's probably public enemy number one when it comes to trying to protect any of your privacy. But I'm curious as to what you think of South Africa. You come back here often enough, but and, you know, you've got connections here in terms of where you're from and your family and all sorts of other things. But I'm curious as to how you observe us right now, as opposed to how you've seen us every other time. Do you think that there's something interesting going on right now? Because we really did go through a lot in the last 8 to 10 years, which has changed many people's opinions about what South Africa was post Nelson Mandela in 1994 and all the rest of it, and where we're headed now. Do you have any preconceived notions of that or any researched notions?
I mean, I think I don't come here enough to kind of really have a finger on the pulse. But what I do feel very strongly is that although people talk about a generation with no kind of living memory of apartheid, I think that both the trauma and the political engagement lives on in the young generation. And there's a few incidents which, you know, I don't necessarily have to quote here, but I think that people are incredibly switched on and have a sense of agency that the equivalent generation in Europe or America do not have. They don't feel entitled to have a political position. They don't feel entitled to challenge those in authority. And I think as much as the so-called kind of peaceful revolution of 94 has been a thorough disappointment, on the other hand, I think that that kind of political engagement lives on, you know, and it's, I see people who have, you know, who are fighting here in a good way.
Yeah. In other words, there's a tremendous sense of empowerment along with that agency and that entitlement you're talking about.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's long overdue.
Yeah.
It should have really been their parents' province, but here we are.
Well, they were sold down the river, weren't they?
Exactly. So let's just talk for a second about some of the things that you're interested in doing with this exhibition that you've got at the Goodman. And I do want to talk about the one at the Pompidou Center too, because that's quite a, as I say, in artistic terms, that's a very big deal to be put on there. There are only a few places in the world that are more prestigious in terms of having a venue for an exhibition of your own. So here at the Goodman, what are we expecting?
We have devised a show called Bandage the Knife, Not the Wound.
Okay.
I'm not going to give away all its secrets, but just to tell you that it marks a big change in our practice. I think we've spent 20 years dealing with political issues in a very tight conceptual manner. So I think one of our last shows here, we looked at the history of Polaroid and how they colluded with the apartheid government. We looked at the history of Kodak and how inherently racist color film was until it was pointed out by Jean-Luc Godard that it was actually predicated to white skin. We've been embedded with the British military, the Israeli, we've been in Iraq, but each time it's been to kind of reveal how power functions. We've got ourselves embedded, often lying through our teeth, pretending to be journalists and not artists. And funnily enough, those in power are often more scared of artists than they are of journalists. And this show here really is a kind of moment of departure, I think. For the first time, we're looking at not other people's archives or other institutions' archives, but our own. And a lot of the works on the wall are very personal, intensely personal. We don't necessarily reveal all of the stories. And also didn't necessarily start with a very tight, conceptual, rigorous, political position, but started in a more playful, intuitive, and kind of unconscious way. So a year ago, I moved from London to Berlin, and Ollie and I shared a studio for 20 years. And almost unconsciously, we started this kind of exchange of images where Ollie would send me an image, I'd put one on top, send it back to him. So it was this game of like exquisite corpse. but what's so interesting, and we use, because we were similarly feeling a little bit kind of in a cul-de-sac, how do we feel about photography in this age of 13 trillion images, you know?
Which how do you stand out in that?
And I think our reply to that was to find those images that refuse to be deleted over the generations of hard drives, and those few images that really are meaningful to one another, and they're not necessarily the same for both of us. And then so this exchange, this kind of exchange in images and the layering of them one upon the other is kind of what informs the show.
That sounds very, very interesting. I'm curious also as to, you know, sort of the ideological take on the world as it is at the moment, because there's this dilemma, particularly on the left, between giving the state more power to make things fairer and more equal, and not trusting the state because the state has been the embodiment of this structural power relationship, which is so prejudicial to individual freedom and sovereignty.
Mm.
I mean, do you have a position on that?
Yeah, I mean, mostly through our medium. I mean, if you look at the history of photography, it is, since its inception, inherently tied to power. So, you know, the police mugshot, you know, made by Alphonse Bertillon was paid for by the police. Most early photography was paid for by governments or states sending emissaries out to photograph, you know, Palestine, which was imaged as a mostly empty land, or those images of the early West in America. So, and there was a subtext to those images, which is saying, these places are devoid of people ripe for colonization, right? So I think when you look at any form of photography, it's always been tied in with power. I mean, policing, cataloging, you know, counting. And so when we spent time in Polesmoor Prison, it was very easy to get the permission of those in power. And when you walk around a prison or a psychiatric hospital and you're carrying a camera, you're immediately seen as part of the establishment, right? So it's got this toxic relationship, photography yeah. with power.
Well, how does it make you feel that your medium of choice is being utilized now, even in this day and age, at a time where we're supposed to be more free than we've ever been? And I do think we are. But that it's being utilized for identification and for advertising, and it's being used to control, in effect,
well, I think never before. I think that's what drives our practice. So, for instance, this facial technology thing I was talking about, we actually got access to the company in Russia before they had rolled out this technology. We went to Russia and we reenacted a body of work made during the Weimar Republic by August Sander, who photographed everybody from the banker to the baker to the artist's wife. It was a lifelong task, right? We did it in 2 days. We got all of those characters, the banker, the radio mm-hmm. presenter, the analyst, cast in Russia, and we got them to walk through these doors, and in 2 days they were all imaged and catalogued, and we published that as a book called Spirit is a Bone, and it was almost published just before it was rolled out as a way of warning people.
This is what's coming,
right? And we're not in control of our own image, and we're not in control of our own public space. But I think this show is, like I said, marks a departure in that these images are intensely personal and private, and that's also another way of battling that, where you can hold on to something. Something's still sacred, right?
Mm.
That nobody can touch, and that's a beautiful feeling when you're holding that close to you, and in this case, sharing it with many, many people.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear there is still something sacred.
Mm.
Because in all of this, you tend to think that everyone's going to turn into a Kardashian and that we become devoid of that kind of sanctity.
But no, only if Silicon Valley gets their way, I think.
But you said now that you know, these pictures are being put into the world, and we cataloging ourselves and documenting ourselves, and you said we're doing it voluntarily. It's almost not even a powerful enough way to describe it. It's being done enthusiastically. We're no, very, absolutely. Very keen to make sure that you got us from all angles all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah, yeah. Capture us.
Yeah, I mean, we do it for self-promotion, but also the flip side is the kind of self-flagellation, right? But, I mean, we are constantly broadcasting ourselves. And I think, like I say, I'm repeating myself now, but all we're doing is providing fodder for this machine. Data for this giant machine.
Who are those people who said that there was a tribe or a certain group of people who never wanted to be photographed because they believed that it stole a piece of their soul?
Well, there's always been that rumor.
Is that
rumor.
Apocryphal? Or
no,
is that?
There's that rumor that when you know, Africa was colonized, there was people were greeted with this paranoia that their soul would be captured by this kind of technology. In fact, I think what what the narrative actually is that people were aware that they were being policed, catalogued, colonized, and they were resisting that in a political way. So I think that's a little sweet little, not urban, but colonial anecdote that robs the politics of that resistance, you know?
Have you ever encountered anyone who won't let you have their photograph?
Many times, and really, really enjoy it when that happens.
Because it's a rare thing.
Yeah. No, and it's
like
also,
that woman who doesn't want people to know she won the lottery. Well, listen to this list of places where you've already exhibited: the Museum of Modern Art, the Tate in Britain, the Tate Liverpool, Guangzhou Biennale, which of course is one of the, that's the one in China, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's this list goes on and on. There's the Tate Modern, the Museum of Modern Art, the Stedelijk Museum in Holland, the Victorian Albert, the Museum d'Elysée in France, the Pompidou Center, which we've just spoken about very briefly today, and now at the Goodman Gallery for everybody in South Africa to get to see Adam and Oliver and their work. So that starts on Tuesday.
It actually started last night.
Uh-huh. So this Tuesday.
This Tuesday.
Wasn't next Tuesday. So go along and see that. Adam, thanks for coming in to see us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is terrific. And if you want to see some of their work in action, you know where to go. Goodman Gallery.
This is CliffCentral.com.